Welcome back, everyone, to Lean Software Fundamentals. This is our first in-depth module. You'll notice a couple changes. We now have a whiteboard. We'll be doing a little bit of sketching up on here as we're going through our demos. And they're kind of whiteboard demos. And I'm ready to get into it.
Me too. I'm excited.
This is economics over emotion. So that's just saying the word emotion has some emotional connotations here. So our module overview, we're going to go through some of these things. Evaluating trade-offs is a pretty important concept that we'll jump into. Another one is this U-shaped optimizations. Right. And I think a good one here is a demo. We'll need to demo this because we're going to cast back to this idea of a U-shaped optimization time and again throughout the course. But economics being the fundamental thing we talk about. On the next slide, we'll see why we do this. And when you're faced with a decision, you can make a couple choices. You can choose to blindly follow a rule, or you can choose to make an informed decision. Now, there are times when blindly following a rule is probably fine, especially when you're learning to drive, right? It's a stoplight. You stop at stoplights. There are rules that we follow for very particular reasons. One of the successes software methodologies like Scrum has had and others is they have prescriptive guidance and rules that you follow. Those are sometimes good. However, we can blindly adhere to rules, and sometimes people start to treat rules as though they were principles in and of themselves. We're going to ask you in this to choose when to blindly follow rules, but only if you're making an informed decision. And we make that informed decision by looking at the principles that underlying it and measuring it according to something more objective than just kind of gut feel. So we're going to take economics over emotions in this case. So we want to follow that economics. So back to the slides again. Why should you care?
This is one of my favorite ones. All right. So our slide number one, we're going to pick a fight. The agile movement is full to the brim of mindless blind rhetoric, as is every other methodology discussion. And Steve covered this quite well earlier, but the idea is that, let's step back a moment. I understand where that motivation comes from. When you're trying to make a break from a historical paradigm to a new paradigm, it is very important to speak in absolutes. You always do it this way. You always approach the problem from this direction. Those absolutes can be very helpful for making a clean break. But let's be honest, this isn't 1985 anymore. We've moved beyond the need to make a clear break from trying to fit manufacturing management paradigms into software development. That was where we started. We've moved beyond that. And now we need to take that a step further and start actually looking at the principles and the math and the economics that underlie a lot of the absolutes that we were talking about earlier and start evaluating them as actual trade-offs. And start looking at them as trade-offs. I think that's key, right? We've got to start treating these things as it's no longer an absolute. There is an area of chaos on one side, over-planning on the other side, and somewhere in the middle is the truly agile company that can balance those two things effectively. We don't want to live on either extreme. Another big thing that comes into play here is that when you make decisions based on emotions, you personalize them, right? You have a personal stake in the game when you make it based on emotions. Agile purists run into this all the time. You go to a conference and you've got the Scrum guys versus the Kanban guys versus the XP guys, and they're all vehemently opposed to each other when they're actually in violent agreement. They're just talking about it in different ways. And it's a very interesting thing because when you remove the economics from the decision, it becomes your decision and you have a stake in the game. We'll talk about this when we get to our culture flag, but this is a big culture thing too. When we can make these decisions based on economics, it frees you up to make hypothesis-based decisions where you can measure the outcome and persist or pivot based on the outcome, a la
the Lean Startup
movement. Yep. Yes,
exactly. So given that, the other problem is that they're not measurable. You can't measure these things. If you fight it out, we need to be at this extreme. 100% of our code is unit tested. We need to get to continuous delivery, and we need to today move over to shipping every single day or multiple times per day. These are great things. Companies do them brilliantly. However, there's trade-offs involved. Let's not take that extreme because we can't measure it in the case.
Right.
We're going to show you how we can take that mindset out and give us something we can measure.
And even the companies that can deliver every day don't always deliver every day, right? Like, there are things that make sense to deliver on a continuous basis, and there are things that don't make sense to deliver on a continuous basis. You don't change your UX experience every single day, right? Like,
yeah.
Your customers would have a fit, right, if you started changing it every single day. So understanding that there's trade-offs to be gained, and this is a valuation that we need to make on a case-by-case basis. Just because the extreme exists doesn't mean we need to go there.
Yep. So how do we evaluate those trade-offs? And there's a couple steps that we're going to go through. Basically, process decisions are mostly based on trade-offs. If you look at the slide, there's a couple examples. You must automate all testing. It's the only way to be agile. We often hear people say that.
And because we can't automate all testing, we're just not going to go agile because
right.
Since this isn't possible to be automated testing on. We have no framework with which to test. Therefore, we're not agile. We'll never be agile. Go away.
Right. You can't start the testing phase until the development phase is complete, right? This is another absolute that you hear from kind of the other mindset, the phase gate or waterfall mindset. People are like, until development is done, we can't efficiently test. We'll get to that efficiency argument in a moment. But we can't efficiently test because it's churning and changing all the time. So we've got to stop doing any testing until all of development is complete. Another extreme. Let's talk about where we can make these trade-offs. Technical debt is always bad. Man, from otherwise very sophisticated agile practitioners, I hear this discussion, and I frankly disagree violently with it. And frankly, the concept of debt is something that we have to realize that when we're talking to our leadership and our management, they don't always think of debt as bad. It's what allowed them to live in the house that they're living in today. It's what allowed them to leverage an investment so that they could grow into a brand new market. They treat debt as a trade-off. It's a bad thing in that we have to pay it off. It's a good thing in that we can do something faster. We need to look at debt in a similar way. Man, it's a scary thing to say to a group of people who are agile, but I think it's important, and we'll make that trade-off.
I'm going to go with the technical debt thing a little bit more. When you've made the shift from technical debt is always bad to it's okay to sometimes intentionally incur technical debt, you change it to a conversation that you can have. And that's really important because when technical debt is always bad, all teams accrue technical debt. There's never been a team in the history of software development that built 100% perfectly designed software all the time and did everything perfectly constantly, right? That's never happened. But when you approach it from the perspective of technical debt is always bad, you can't have a conversation about let's intentionally accrue this technical debt so that we can go to market faster on this particular feature to beat our customers and prioritize fixing that technical debt 3 sprints from now. You can't have that conversation if technical debt is always bad. And being able to have that conversation, I think, is critical.
Exactly. So we need to be able to make these trade-offs according to some variable. I mean, if we're always talking proxy variables, someone's saying, we need to deliver faster, and someone's saying, no, we need to deliver cheaper.
We need more quality.
We need more quality. All of those things are completely different variables, and it's hard to optimize all of them without some trade-offs between them because they're linked. So we need a way to trade them off, and that's by measuring with a single variable. Now that's gonna be difficult, but we're gonna call that the economics of this, the cost, the true value is the life cycle profit if you're delivering for-profit software.
Right.
The life cycle money you make from your software based on a decision. So if we make a decision, how much will that cost us in the next 3 years of software sales in aggregate. We want to trade off according to that metric. Wow. Let's talk about a hard metric to measure.
Right.
It's certainly not going to be through those ROI case studies that you're, that anyone looking for a project in your company puts together. They tend to be wildly inflated ROI. They tend to be wildly optimistic, and they tend to be wildly wrong. Actually, we don't know if they're wildly
wrong.
Right,
because no one measures it on the back end, right? So we've got no idea whether or not it actually was right. It could have been dead on.
Yeah, could have been.
10% of the time.
So there is a way to do this. But we're going to direct you to a proxy. Again, it's still a proxy, but it's a proxy that we think is far closer to what we experience here in software development, and that's the cost of delay. So if you're coming back to the slide and taking a look at the cost of delay, how much would it cost for a particular piece of value to be delayed by 30 days for your company? Just think about this. You're going to do something, and it's going to delay that feature or that release 30 days. What is that going to do to your company profit-wise? How much money are you going to lose? That's a delay cost.
Right.
And it's a phenomenal proxy for the world we live in. And the reason it's a good proxy is, frankly, in the software community, the sooner we get software to someone, we can make more sales, they can start using it. There's a lot of strong benefits. If you're internal and you're building internal software, same thing. How much will it cost the company if they don't get this feature out the door in an extra 30 days? And if your answer is it's not going to cost the company anything, chances are you maybe shouldn't build that, or that 30-day cutoff is not, you need to think of it as it's maybe a regulation where there's a real steep curve, you know, and you hit a date. We'll talk about that.
Asymmetrical payoff function.
An asymmetrical payoff function, exactly. But truly, if you could defer your project for an infinite amount of time, and the value and the loss to your company was zero, don't build that project.
Right.
Build something else. So we're going to use the cost of delay. How much does it cost? Now, here's the scary part, and I don't know. Andrew and I both asked this question, but Andrew might ask it more than me.
So this is a question that I love to ask customers when I go to initially. Take a big IT project that all of them have worked on or at least know about in the last few cycles and ask them, how much would it have cost to delay that project for 30 days? Don't answer out loud. Write it down on a sticky note. Let everyone write it down first. I mean, this is an exercise I highly recommend that you do inside your own organization. Take just your software team and the last thing that you worked on. Ask everyone, how much would it, during your next retrospective is a great time to do this, how much would it have cost for us to delay that by a single sprint or maybe two sprints? What would have been the value impact to our customers? The orders of magnitude difference in those responses will shock you. I recently did this to an audience of 50 people at an organization, and it was a six-month project. It was a fairly large project that three or four software teams went on. I had answers everywhere from $10,000 to $10 million.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Now, if you think about that, think about all of these people are engineers, right? All of them are making decisions that affect that product and the delivery of that product on a day-to-day basis. And they have wildly varying perceptions of how important it is to go out at a particular time. So they're all making decisions based on completely different information. That's bad.
And that
makes it incredibly difficult to change targets or to change, to make any kind of change, right? Because everybody's pulling in different directions.
Well, a key example of that might be that you've got those two different people, and someone says, you know what? If we hired this outsourced team to do this chunk of work that's separable, it's going to cost us $150,000 to hire them and build this small chunk.
Right.
And if you think that loss of 30 days is worth $10,000, you'll look at the expenditure of $150,000 as crazy,
right,
and you'll fight against it. If, on the other hand, you think it's $10 million in potential revenue lost by slipping 30 days, $150,000 is stupidly trivial. You're not even going to think you're going to pay that money.
Right.
Given that, we're starting to fight because we don't have that measurement. Now, can you measure cost of delay exactly? No. But it's not important that you get the number exactly right. You can always delta it up and down. But let's get on a common ground so that we're arguing with a common denominator, basically.
Yeah, the synchronization of purpose here is more important than the accuracy of the number. We see this when we do estimates around story point estimates, right? We do estimates, we do relative estimates. Cost of delay is a metric that it does make it more difficult to do some of the advanced analysis stuff, but we still can do it relative to the other things in our backlog. Is this more expensive or less expensive to delay than this other thing in our backlog? Steve's example of an outsourced IT for a subsection of work is important, but we can drive that conversation even smaller down to the developer level. Is it worth it for me to build an automated test framework to test this thing that will save us 100 hours over the course of the project? The answer to that question might be yes, but the answer to that question might legitimately be no. It's actually more valuable for us to use that 100 hours to get the project out 2 days sooner. That could totally be a legitimate answer to that question. And if you don't have that cost of delay published and available to everyone on your project, everybody's making those small little decisions on a day-to-day basis with wildly varying priorities.
Yep, they're just not making those as good decisions. So the problem is getting that number to be accurate. I think Andrew nailed it in the slide as well. It doesn't have to be accurate because most optimizations, most things we deal with in software are U-shaped. You don't have to be precise to get good results. There really is such a thing as good enough, and this is a U-shaped decision. And we'll talk about how most decisions that we make in software are U-shaped decisions, frankly, and how do we handle those decisions. And I think now's probably as good a time as any to do a demo, to start us off on the whiteboard. So let's move to our first whiteboard demo, and that's going to be a U-shaped decision. So moving over to the whiteboard, let's take a look at an example. And the example that we're going to use today will be... Let's talk about software delivery. Continuous delivery is something that catches the world by storm now. Everyone wants to deploy 100 times a day, right? Or something like that. They want to just deploy on every check-in.
Push a button. Every time. It always happens.
And so let's draw some costs. And I'm going to draw a graph here. And if we take a look here, and on this side, what we're going to have is overall cost for things. And running across this will be our frequency of releases. So we have a very low frequency here and a very high frequency here. This might be your waterfall, deploy once every, once every 3 to 6 months. On the right-hand side might be deploying every check-in.
Right.
Right? Now, let's make some assumptions here as we go. You need to do some kind of testing. There's some cost to you delivering a release. And this is probably true in your organization. You're probably not at a push button. So if you release once every 6 months, that cost is going to be pretty low, your overall cost. But that cost, however, will increase as you go to a higher and higher and higher and higher frequency of releases. And it might increase linearly. So you're going to have this growth of your overall cost. So this is your cost of releases. And you don't have to necessarily read my handwriting, but that is the cost of the releases. On the flip side, we have other costs. It's not just the cost of the releases. And if we only care about the cost of the release, we're going to deliver at the lowest possible cost, which is going to be right down here at very, very few releases. Once every
2 years.
Yeah, or once every 350 years. I mean, why even release at all, right? We minimize our costs completely if we don't release. So we know there's another cost. And that other cost is the foregone opportunity cost of our customers not being able to use our features. So if we're delivering features very rapidly, their foregone cost is going to be very, very low. It's not going to cost them anything because they're not waiting for it. We release a new feature, bam, right. We can sell it. So our foregone costs are low. And then over, if we release more slowly, obviously what's going to happen is our cost to our customers is going to go up real high. If we never release a new feature, they never get that
benefit.
The
cost is infinite, right? They don't ever get it.
Yep. So we have two competing variables graphed here. Now, if we take those two competing variables and we add up the overall cost, you know, this small area plus this big area, we're going to get a cost curve that looks something like that. This is our U-shaped cost. That U-shaped cost, if we look at the U-shape here, you'll see that that cost defines where we should ship. And we should ship exactly right here.
Economically optimum.
Economically optimum is right at this point right here. What happens if we choose a different frequency that's not optimum? What happens if we release, not quite fast enough? What's our overall cost delta? You know, if you draw some lines over to here, a fairly large shift in how often we release results in a pretty small change in costs, to be honest. We don't have to nail it. We don't have to be exactly right in order to get value from making this decision.
But what we do have to be is not on the extremes. Right.
Right.
So that's kind of the point is that's the point of there is an idea of good enough, which is get away from the extremes and get yourself back towards the center and then call it good enough and be happy and move on to something, move on to another area of your organization where you're at the extremes. Don't spend the next 6 months debating this shift. Find a different curve where you're all the way up here and optimize that curve to get you somewhere towards the middle. Don't spend endless debates on this part, because that part is just cycles and waste time.
Yes, although you may want to now start that you understand it, say this is our optimal delivery. However, if we start automating our deployments, we could drop down overall cost.
Right.
So it could be that we could take this cost curve and change it to something that looks like that.
Right.
If we did that, when we summed up this one, we're going to get a different value. And that's going to look like this. If we take the sum of this one and this one, take the blue one out at that point, and sum that, you're going to find that the cost curve now, the U-shaped curve, looks like that. And that's going to give us a different location for our optimal deployment. Schedule, our optimum cadence for deployment. So don't let the force to the mean, the U-shaped decision is a very, very important discussion. But once you've had that discussion, now you can start talking wisely about what would it take to get to us a faster delivery cadence. How do we get there? Well, we do it by making this cheaper.
Right.
And we don't do it by sitting there arguing about, well, I read in a book that, you know.
That continuous delivery is a good thing.
Exactly.
Right?
And that we have to get to that continuous delivery model right away. Otherwise, we will fail. That's kind of the fundamental trade-off. So if we were to summarize this whole module, it summarizes to, let's take economics or something measurable over emotions. Let's pull the emotions and the dogma out and base it on something measurable. That something should be the overall life cycle profits of your product. Incredibly difficult to measure. So we are gonna ask for a proxy, and we're gonna assert it here. I'd be very happy if you tweet questions about it. Check out Don Reinertsen's book. It also talks about this. But we're gonna use cost of delay as our proxy measure for that life cycle value.
Well, it's just such a great translation metric. Almost everything that we do can be expressed in cost of delay. We can adding unit tests, removing, not doing as much unit testing, increasing the design phase, decreasing the design phase, longer requirements documents, shorter requirements documents. All of these things affect the cycle time of delivering a particular unit of value, reducing batch sizes or increasing batch sizes. It's a great translation metric. Almost everything that we do can be expressed in cost of delay in one form or another. And that's the beauty of cost of delay.
Now, this does give us to our culture flag again, however. So looking back at the culture flag, you'll see that the lean mindset, this idea of experimentation, focus on flow, these feedback loops, this incremental, we got to take it beyond a dictated process. We need a way that we can do these trade-offs, that we can measure them, and we're going to take that and take the ideas from Scrum, ideas from XP, pull these ideas together and say, what do we want to take from these? What can we measure and how we can get better? Now, the last thing I want to state while we're on culture, if you are completely broken, if you are not delivering software, the things that we are saying today probably aren't going to apply to you as well as scrapping everything you're doing and grabbing an off-the-shelf methodology and saying, everyone follow this exactly. So we're not arguing that the methodologies are bad.
Yes, totally.
But when you are rolling through and you're delivering value and you're delivering value to your customers and they're paying for it and they appreciate it and they like it, whatever that measure is, we need a way to improve on that, and that's what we're covering today. So if you're completely broken, go check out a methodology and start there. If you're not completely broken, if you're delivering successfully, that's where we need to start thinking about these trade-offs. And from a cultural standpoint, we need to be willing to not get in a room and yell at each other based on dogmatic extremes, but instead based on a measure that we can share. We're going to argue that measure is cost of delay, how much it costs you to slip your thing a period of time, to slip your feature, and we're going to ask you to come up with what that number should be. It doesn't have to be necessarily accurate. You can tweak that number over time, but the team needs to agree on it. Otherwise, you get the same type of crazy disagreements like we talked about with the outsource team.
So while we're on the culture flag, I just want to pull in the idea of incentives and how do you incentivize this sort of behavior in your organization? A lot of this is not chasing vanity metrics, right? Unit testing is one of my all-time favorites for this because it's such a vanity metric that people just love to chase, right? We've got 89% unit test coverage of our code. Okay, well, actually only about 10% of your code really needed unit tests. The rest was getters and setters, right? Like, congratulations, you spent tons and tons of money to unit test getters and setters. Awesome, good job. But that's really important. To think of incentivizing your culture around, or incentivizing your employees around a culture of experimentation and exploration rather than incentivizing absolutes. And I think a lot of what, there's a giant role for management to play in properly setting up an incentive structure that incentivizes these kinds of behaviors throughout our organizations.
Yep, and a fair point is gonna be, you know, you can take these incentives and you're gonna pass them, you're gonna want the incentives to align everyone in not on these absolutes, but on the flip side, you may find that in your organization you have to incentivize an absolute,
right?
Because it pulls you in the right direction. And we're fine with that, because you have thought through the implications with a real framework.
Yes, totally.
Okay, that one is, I would argue, the most difficult of the ones to kind of get your brain around. Unfortunately, it's a hard one for anyone in software development to understand exactly what the financial impact of something is. And it's hard in software development, at least for engineers like me, to say, yeah, the number itself doesn't have to be all that accurate, but we have to share that number with the team.
That's a huge crux I find among software developers. Right, we're engineers.
Yeah.
And if you give me a number that you're telling me isn't inaccurate, I'm not going to pay any attention to it, right? Like, my initial thought is, it's not right anyway, so why would I care? The number itself isn't important. It is important, but it's not the most important piece of it. It's the alignment of everyone's efforts in the same direction. Later on, we'll talk about the decentralization of decision-making authority. Publishing a metric like cost of delay can help you maintain alignment across teams and also alter that alignment very quickly. Think about the power of a 6-month project that cuts across 7 teams. You need to say, we need to get this out the door in 5 months instead of 6 months, and it's vastly important to our organization. With something like cost of delay, you can publish that information and make it tangible and understandable across the entire organization very quickly. You say, all of a sudden, our competitors moved into the same field, and now instead of it costing us $5 million to slip a month, it's going to cost us $50 million to slip a month. Just like that, everybody's decision-making changed. The whole paradigm switched just by changing a single visible metric across all your teams.
That's a great point. And it's a foreshadowing of what we'll be talking about. So, cost of delay, it's also U-shaped. You can be off a little bit, and it's going to be okay. All right, for the next section, we're going to be jumping into some of the more meatier topics that are a little less abstract than something like a cost of delay or money. So stick around, come back in 10 minutes, and we'll continue.